Welcome to The Educated Investor, brought to you by the Householder Group Estate and Retirement Planning. At Cishon Financial, Regional Vice President David Cishon takes a proactive approach to helping you develop a strategy to address your financial goals and objectives using the most efficient methods available. Now, here's your host, Scott Whatley and David Cishon.
And we'd like to welcome you to The Educated Investor. Happy Monday to everyone. Hope everyone had a great, great weekend. And we are glad to bring you this show each week. You can check out the website, cishonfinancialservices.com. That's C-I-C-H-O-N, financialservices.com. And their number, 720-482-1917. And with that, we will welcome David Cishon. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm fine, Scott. Nice to be with you. Hey. Hope you had a great weekend.
Yes, sir. Man, I tell you, absolutely gorgeous, wasn't it? Absolutely. Hey, we want to help you with every show in some way in helping you with your estate and retirement planning. And today we're kind of going to talk about estate planning, and that is one of the five areas that we've always talked about over the last few years with David of financial planning, and that is estate planning. So, David, I guess first of all, when you sit down with people and kind of talk about, you know, this whole idea of their retirement plan, do most people have an idea that estate planning plays such a huge role?
Yeah, well, they have an idea.
Okay.
They've heard the term.
Right.
And most estate planners will tell you that mistakes and oversights really occur very, very frequently, and it's regardless of whether the client or the prospect has $1 billion or a few hundred thousand dollars. And it's a shame because a lot of people either don't have a plan,
mm-hmm.
or they have a plan that they thought they put together years ago, stuck it in the drawer, never looked at it again.
Right.
So, you know, there's some essentials that we always look at when people come in, because again, there's some key features here in estate planning that we always look at, and we'll talk about these. But like education and communication is one, and
mm-hmm.
and anticipating family conflicts, which never happen, is another. even understanding the basics of the plan, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, the people that will come in, like I said, you know, they understand that they need to have something, and some of them do,
mm-hmm.
but they don't really know all the different elements. For example, you know, a basic will, you know, so that the state doesn't mandate who your assets go to, you do. And then there's the opportunity, if you need it, to have a living trust that we'll talk about, and certain powers of attorney, so that if you have a financial, you know, consideration and you can't make the decision, you appointed somebody that can make that decision for you, and also a power of attorney or advanced medical directive, so that people can act in your benefit if you're incapable because of whatever reason.
Right.
So, you know, you have to have these things, and one of the major reasons plans that people have aren't successful is really that the next generation, maybe their kids or whoever they're leaving it to, really aren't prepared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we see many times where I'll ask older clients that have them, well, how did you communicate to your kids or beneficiaries what your estate plan says, how much assets you have? And rarely is that accomplished.
Right.
You know, they don't. And all of a sudden, the beneficiary, something happens. The parents die, one or the other first and then the second, and the kids get this money. And they don't have a clue. All they see is cash. They don't know any of the where-for-alls as to how the parents really put it together, how they invested it, what they like to do, and they have this will that just gives them the opportunity to here it is, cash it out and take the money. And many, many times they are lost in continuing these assets to really benefit them. They end up spending or losing this money to bad investments or scams. And of course, you know, education is a critical element here, and we make recommendations to people that they should be doing this over a period of time, not a 1 hour some day of the life of these kids, but over a period of time of maybe once a year, reviewing with them how you put your assets together, what you'd like to see done with them, how you're going to receive them, or you can receive them in cash or property, you know. But again, having a conversation so it's not such a shock if something happens.
Right.
And making sure that these documents are up to date.
And I'm sure you've heard, you know, way more stories than I have, but I can't tell you, just over the years, you know, we've been doing radio and just different things. And I mean, I actually had a young man call me one time, and I mean, just a horrific story, but his dad had committed suicide, and he called into our helpline saying, you know, he told me he had a will, but I don't know where to go to find it, you know? I mean, it was just a horrible deal. So, like I say, that communication has got to be there, especially with people involved in your immediate family and maybe those you've designated for different duties, right?
Oh, absolutely. And again, some of those people that you originally designated may not even be around. Who knows?
Yeah. True.
Could be a death, or they moved out of the area. Any number of things. There was divorce and so forth. So meetings and communicating is a very good thing to do. And if they, meaning the parents or the people with the will or the trust, if they're uncomfortable in discussing these kinds of things, then, you know, bring in their financial advisor, have them, you know, communicate, do reviews on the estate from time to time, but to communicate with the kids or the heirs so they understand what the intentions are and how to manage those intentions, you know, in the best interest of all parties.
Right.
Because the bottom line is, if you don't, Uncle Sam is going to get more. And what I mean by Uncle Sam, either the federal government or the state government will get more of these assets than they should.
Right. And I'm sure, you know, most people that you deal with, you know, they probably have some type of will or whatever. But I've seen so many times where people just say, oh, you know, my wife will take care of things in the financial world, or, you know, she can just take care of the accounts. But many people don't realize if you're not on those accounts – designated in some way, you can't get into those accounts, right?
Oh, absolutely. Correct. You know, and many times I've seen this situation where they have a safe deposit box at a bank, and the bank hears that someone passed away, they lock that drawer. And if someone wants to get it and they're not on the account, forget it.
Wow.
It's got to go through probate and the mess that exists with that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, communications, like you said, the will is something that's there. And yet you read, I was just reading over the weekend, there was a, you know, that great singer, Prince.
Oh, sure.
Right? He didn't have a will. Didn't have a will. Didn't name an executor. Didn't name anybody. And it is going to be a very, 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 very expensive mess to clean up. That's just one of many. You know, and I see this happening more frequently than you can imagine. It's just not these big name people and very important, prominent people. We've had our fair share here in Colorado, quite honestly.
Yes.
But but it's the average person or the person that needs to have the documents in place and doesn't have a current, for example, power of attorney or a current living will, which is your right to die.
Right.
It's outdated. And will it work? Of course it'll work, but it could get very, very expensive, which is why most people go after and get an attorney to handle this stuff, and it's not cheap. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's the way it is. And consequently, these assets can be dissipated because not taken care of, getting it up to date, looking at these documents every 2, 3, 4 years, depending on what your attorney or estate planning attorney recommends. We typically recommend a review if there's a major law change, just to give your attorney a call, or at the very least, every 3, 4, 5 years, sit down and do a review. Or certainly if there's a change in your will of people that you have in there that you don't want in there or can't be in there anymore.
Sure. And, you know, this is something, too, that a lot of people, you know, tend to put off a lot because, number one, who wants to think about it, you know, the end of life and all. But, you know, like you said, boy, the communication with other family members and all, and, boy, if anything we've learned over these last, you know, 12 to 15 months is, boy, life is uncertain, health is uncertain, and I can't tell you how many, you know, just people I know and different stories I read, how someone became incapacitated very quickly and very unexpectedly, and then you can't sit down and go through this stuff. So now you're in a mess, putting it off.
Yeah, and if they are really in bad shape, like all these people that ended up, you know, passing on, unfortunately, you know, maybe they didn't have but an old will or none at all, and, of course, they aren't capable of signing one on their deathbed. If they're incompetent or aren't conscious, and if they don't have powers of attorney in place, then their kids, whomever, can't do it either. So, and we see this all often. And of course, one of the other aspects that we see a lot is anticipating family conflicts. Now, I know you. There's never a conflict.
Yeah.
People pass on. But boy, I tell you, these conflicts can be very, very problematic. And the thing that I initially hear from people when I ask them, my kids are perfect. They get along pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say that. And they'll say, you know, heck, the kids will work it out. We don't have to worry about it. Well, personalities change over time, and whether it's different personalities or philosophies, jointly inherited property or people that are involved can be very, very disruptive and very embarrassing
right.
to the balance of the family members.
Sure.
So,
I real quick, I had a friend of mine once, I believe it was his. It was his father that had died, and. His recent ex-wife, I say recent, had been divorced 4 or 5 years. She went to the house of where he lived during the funeral, knowing everyone was going to be at the funeral, and took all the stuff she wanted out of the house during the funeral. So, like you say, situations change things, and money changes people sometimes.
Oh, yeah, it really is. And so it's something that needs to be addressed and resolved. Which is why, you know, some people, and we'll kind of talk about this a little later, but some people choose to have, you could call it a family trust. It's really called a revocable trust because you can always change the documents. But they'll have a trust, and they'll have everything in writing in that trust so that, you know, the kids just pick it out, whoever's the co-trustee or surviving trustee, or executor or whatever it might be, reads it, and it's there. It's black and white. Mom or dad said this, this, and this. There's nothing for the kids to argue over. They may not be happy, but that's it. And it's so much easier than just saying, oh, well, the kids will handle it.
Yes, sir.
And it doesn't work well.
Absolutely.
So that is a huge concern there.
Now, you mentioned making gifts earlier.
Yeah.
There's a proper way to do that, right?
Well, there is. It depends on the type of gift that you want to make.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give them cash over time? Do you want to give them real estate? And again, there are tax reasons for doing certain things and how to do them so that they get the benefit of those events. And I think that most people, if they are going to make gifts, if they're fortunate enough to have the, wherefor-alls to make substantial gifts, and I don't mean gifts like throwing in a couple $100 on their birthday to their retirement, to their college education fund, or those kinds of things. I mean, you know, substantial amounts of monies. What's going to be the best way of making those gifts and making those gifts in the manner that they'll treat those gifts as you want them to be treated for their benefit or their grandkids' benefits?
Mm-hmm. Now, when you sit down with people, this is one thing I think that's great about the way that you do business. You have contacts with all the folks, you know, from tax folks to, you know, estate planning and all that. Mm-hmm. So someone doesn't have to go to someone else. And while they're certainly welcome to, I like it because I think all the people that you work with know what you expect and know what people need as well.
Right, right. And we kind of act, if you will, as a hub on a wheel. We pull in the different resources that we want to use if the client or the prospects wants that. You know, if a person has an attorney that they really like and want to use, that's fine with me, as long as he's open to communications and we can address certain areas, that's fine. Obviously, when we're talking estate planning, I prefer to be using an estate planning attorney.
Right.
Not someone that chases ambulances and other things, but someone who really understands estate planning and the tools that can be used from the smallest client to the largest client, and they specialize in that area. Many people think, I'll just get a will and stick it in a drawer and be done. Well, mm-hmm. You know, the laws change, things happen, and you need somebody. You can also get these wills online. You order them, or powers of attorney, and some people, I've seen people come in, they have that, and they think that's good because it costs them next to nothing. But if something goes wrong, who do you sue? Do you mm-hmm. sue yourself?
Well, I mean, it'd be just like trying to do an a financial plan off of some just fill in the blanks. I mean, no situation is for everybody. So there's going to be questions that are just not fill in the blank easy, right?
That is so correct. And you want people that, you know, are paid a reasonable amount of money so that if there is a mistake, you have recourse. They all have errors and omissions. Not that you want to use that. But it's still there. They're professionals. They specialize. They can keep you abreast and keep you in line. And again, understanding the basics of your own plan is critical. You don't have to be your own attorney mm-hmm. or understand all the legalese, but you've got to have it organized, simplified, and you have to understand the basics. There's been different surveys done. There's a magazine out there, Private Wealth, and they do these surveys from time to time. And what was interesting was 70% of the estate planners that they talked with believe that most of their clients don't really understand their estate plan. And it's true.
Wow.
I'll ask what this clause means in their will or what this clause means in their trust. Very simple, straight. They have no clue. So people need to have a list of goals that they're trying to do in this estate plan, whatever it is. Just know what they're trying to accomplish, and then have the ability to understand from the person that you're working with the basics. You don't have to understand every single little thing, but understand the basic. And because quite honestly, when people do have wills, and if the attorney discusses it before they sign or trust, they may understand it then, but, you know, 6 months or 6 years from now, they're going to lose some of that knowledge.
Sure. David C. Shawn is with us. You're listening to The Educated Investor. Their number, 720-482-1917. It is cshawnfinancialservices.com is the website. Again, that's C-I-C-H-O-N, financialservices.com. Free consultation, again, 720-482-1917. Now, another little area in our notes here I wanted to touch on, too, when you talk about a business succession. So if someone has a business, my, I can't imagine the nightmare that may present for the family if nothing was in writing of what to do, how to handle it when there's a business involved.
Well, that's exactly true. You know, we see a lot of folks come in, they have small businesses or medium-sized businesses, but they don't really have a succession plan. And that's one of the major reasons why few businesses survive the second generation of owners. They end up with a business that might be successful, and now what do you do with it? You got to be able to run it.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to really own it? Or is it a combination? Well, if someone doesn't know anything about your business, how are they going to run it?
Sure.
You know, people need to have a roadmap. Whether it's in your estate, so your executive knows, or in your business, so whoever is there, you know, they know, you know, that they know.
Right.
And how to handle this, you know?
Right.
Whether it's to be sold or run, you know, it's guesstimated that a successful succession plan usually takes about 5 years to really put in place so that everybody who's involved knows what is going to happen.
Yes, sir. Makes sense.
You know, and it should make sense, and yet very, very few people do it because, you know, it's the shoemaker's shoes. You know, he's busy taking care of everybody else's and forgets that he's got holes in his.
Absolutely. Now, when you talk about, you know, leaving, maybe most people think of leaving your kids cash and money, and that's what their goal is, to take care of their kids, but do you normally recommend that you know, don't just leave them cash that they can just get to, that they put it in some kind of trust?
Well, you know, that's a good thing. It all depends on the people that are involved, the beneficiary, the kids themselves. If there's a question as to whether they can handle it properly according to your wishes or your thoughts about their ability to handle money, or if they've been involved with marrying people that have turned out to be not the wisest of judgments, you know, you might consider, let's have it in a trust and let's make provisions so they can access it, but not to the extent that they can destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
And or allow those assets to go outside the family. You know, divorces happen, and if it's just a will, anybody can contend that will. So a spouse that's divorced, ex-spouse, or even adopted kids or kids themselves, if they don't like what they hear, they can go after that will.
Right.
A properly drafted trust, most good estate planning attorneys will tell you that they can do it in a manner that those things can be avoided and the assets will stay where they rightfully belong.
Now, when you talk about going over these again, just for those that were maybe didn't catch that, if they mm-hmm. feel like they have, you know, some type of estate plan, they should look that over how often again?
Well, it all depends. You know, we recommend any time there's a major law change
mm-hmm.
or a major change in their lives or the lives of people that are associated with the documents, that's a time to review. Certainly anywhere from 3, 4, 5 years just to review because, again, we forget most things in 90 days.
Right.
So, you know, and again, I think we're going to see different things coming out of Congress that is going to be attacking our monies to some degree, and not necessarily all in a negative manner, but still attacking
mm-hmm.
because they got to fund. We got to pay for all of these tools, monies that are going into the economy and into the infrastructure, perhaps. Somebody's got to pay for them.
Sure.
And so it's easy to make laws I mean, I read one that's they're contemplating of reducing the federal estate tax exemption. You know, we each have 3 or 4 million exemptions, so that we can pass those assets on to people and not pay any federal estate tax, which is quite a large percentage, somewhere around 45% of that to the federal government. They're thinking of reducing that, and there's an article I read just the other day, back to 1 million. So you go from 11 million to 1 million.
Oh, my.
Well, yeah. That could affect a lot of people that never thought they would be affected. Having a small business and a house and so forth, and pretty soon, poop, you're over that million. So, you know, we've got to be aware, and that's why I say from time to time, it's not stick it in the drawer and forget about it, because that costs people tremendous amounts of monies.
Absolutely. Once again, it is David C. Sean. It is CSeanFinancialServices.com. Their number is 720-482-1917. And, hey, look, we've all had a lot of time to think about all the things in the future. Maybe you've got a plan, but give David a call and get that second opinion. It is absolutely free of charge for that initial consult. All you have to do is call 720-482-1917. So, David, great information once again, sir, and we'll look forward to our visit next week.
You betcha, Scott. Have a great day.
Thank you, sir, and you as well. You've been listening to Educated Investor with David C. Sean of the Householder Group. We got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
This is Chris Kane with 303 Roofer. If you have an insurance claim on your roof and want to keep some of that money in your pocket, give us a call and we'll give you a cash bid to replace your roof. You pay insurance every month and now insurance has paid you. It's your money and we understand that. So give us a call at 303-390-1382 or visit our website, 303roofer.com.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the Asset Manager All-in-One Loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loan to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Avoid the pitfalls with Kevin Flesh. Picture this. You're in court before a judge and jury trying to get the at-fault party's insurance company to cover your hospital bills, and the defense attorney pulls out your medical records. Comparing what you said to the police at the scene of your injury to what your doctor transcribed, you've contradicted yourself. You start to get nervous. You don't want to look like an idiot, but you simply don't recall what you said to the police. That was a long time ago. KLC's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, prepares you for these kinds of questions so you never need to worry about what to say. Of course, the opposition will always try to call your credibility into question. But with Kevin Flesh, you always know exactly how to respond. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Trial tested, trial ready.
Hey, let me tell you about one of my favorite stores. It's the Outdoorsman's Attic, located at 2650 West Hamden in Sheridan. Hi, this is Scott Watley, and you may ask, why is this one of my favorite stores? Well, you never know what you're going to find. But I will promise you this, you will find great service and great bargains from this family-owned store. It may be a great deal on that 12-gauge shotgun you've been looking for, or maybe that rifle you haven't been able to find anywhere. And hey, they might even have that ammo in stock that you have been driving all over town looking for. The Outdoorsman's Attic is a consignment store for hunting, fishing, and camping gear. Now look, you've been moving that gear around your garage for months. Don't move it. Take it to the outdoorsman's attic and turn it into cash. Need to get that fishing license? Maybe grab some live bait? Head on over to 2650 West Hamden. And if your firearm needs a little work, ask for Scott the Gunsmith. It's the Outdoorsman's Attic, 2650 West Hamden. Tell them Scott sent you.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome to Your Health Matters, sponsored by Integrated Health Systems. Traditional medicine has left you frustrated. You've seen doctor after doctor searching for answers, only to feel more confused than ever. Chiropractic neurologist Dr. Shane Stedman, along with his team at Integrated Health Systems, does the detective work you need to identify causes, not just treat your symptoms. Using a team approach to combine functional medicine with neurology, Integrated Health Systems spends the necessary time with each client to find out what's really going on. Thanks to Dr. Stedman and his team, many clients who struggle with debilitating health issues have finally found relief. Now, Haystack Help Radio proudly presents Your Health Matters.
And we'd like to welcome you to Your Health Matters. Again, my name is Scott Whatley. We appreciate you being with us. We are trying to connect with Dr. Perry Maynard here. And so I was going to take just a few minutes, and I rarely take time out of our guest time to do this, but just talk a little bit about Haystack Help and what we do as far as our referral list. And so if you go to haystackhelpradio.com, we decided to combine the two websites with our referral list as well as all of our podcasts. So, by the way, if you miss a show and you'd like to hear it in its entirety, you can go to haystackhelpradio.com and hear that, and also our referral list is there. But we're always looking for good companies to become a part of our program, and we will, we check those companies out very, very thoroughly, make sure they are licensed, insured, those type of things, and we do that every year upon their renewal as well. And I know there's a lot of, other referral lists out there, and there's some good ones out there as well, but we just really want to try to bring you good companies, and so I hope you'll check us out. Again, it is haystackhelpradio.com. And if you're a company out there and, hey, you'd like to be a part of our program, we would love to visit with you. And you can reach me, just scott@haystackhelp.com, and I promise you we will get right back to you. But it's a great thing to have good companies, because there are just so many scams out there, and we are just hearing about them all the time. And we're going to be doing some shows in the following weeks here just on some current scams. We've talked with the Better Business Bureau as well, and they're going to come on with us and talk about some of the current scams that are out there a lot in contractors in that whole world as well. And so there's just a lot to go over, and especially this time of year when people are looking at all the different things with remodeling and getting contracts. And Chris Kane, who was on with 303 Roofers with me a few weeks ago, we talked about that and all the things that you need to make sure are included in your contract. So just, be very careful. And, there's good companies out there that may come by and put a door hanger on your door, all that. But our advice is, never sign anything at your door, whether that may be in your mind just permission to get on your roof or to check some things out. You've just got to be very, very careful in doing that. And so just one of the great things about is we just can really find good companies. And our list is a little bit different. We don't try to have 50 companies in every category. We try to find just one or two companies that will give you a choice there that you can check out. So I hope you'll check us out at haystackhelpradio.com. And we are going to, Dr. Maynard got tied up, so we are going to go to a previous show that we had with Integrated Health Systems, and you can join that now. My name is Scott Whatley. We are glad you are with us. Each week, a team member from Integrated Health Systems joins us, and today we have Dr. Perry Maynard. Dr. Maynard, how are you, sir?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Hey, it's always good to talk with you, and a lot of times when I get off the elevator there to slip over the office, I'll see you in with patients in your other room there that you guys have. And, let's talk about that. Man, you guys got a nice facility there to deal with a lot of different ailments for people, don't you?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we, over the past few years, have added some space and have, honestly, I think a really good setup. And actually, Dr. Stem and I were talking about this the other day. I feel actually quite fortunate that, you know, even through this COVID pandemic, we were able to grow and to bring on more staff, and to be able to better serve our patients. So, yeah, I mean, we got a great whole area that is meant for neurological rehab, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, physical therapy. It's just a really nice area. It's got nice windows overlooking the mountains. It's actually kind of funny, and Dr. Sedman jokes with me that's my office, and they have to come find me there because half the time I hang out there. I got a nice view of the mountain. So yeah.
And you know what I think is cool about it too is most time when I've been in there too. I mean, it gives your patients and you privacy as well. Just because of as much space as you have.
Yeah, it is very nice, you know, that we can have, people over here doing certain things and then other people over there. And one actually nice aspect actually is sometimes even, building a community, and not as much now, you know, with COVID and having a ton of people over there. But in the past, it's always been nice if you have two people that are suffering from two similar things from a concussion, you know, they can almost be there and be their own cheerleader. Mm-hmm. Or they can say, hey, I've been seeing so-and-so in there. You know, they're in there every time I'm in there. And, wow, like, I can even notice a difference in them. And that can almost build hope and encouragement in them to be seeing someone suffering from what they're suffering, also making improvements. And so it also builds almost this, like, team camaraderie between patients, which can be motivating, you know, because sure. You see someone else doing well, it motivates you to try to, you know, almost be competitive and do just as well as them. So I think it's cool in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to be kicking off a topic this month and talking about blood sugar. And boy, man, who does that not affect? It affects everybody, doesn't it?
Yes, it definitely does, especially with the holiday seasons behind us. I think blood sugar is so important because it's so foundational. It's such a foundational system of the body that it's so tightly related to so many other facets of health. And eating food is something that we do every single day, or some of us do, unless some people are into fasting and things like that. Eating is something that's always occurring. So blood sugar stability, all things related to blood sugar are really important because they're being affected every day by the sleep we get, by the exercise we do or do not do, by our stress levels, by the foods we eat, by the timing of the foods we eat, and how close we eat those maybe to exercise. Those things are affecting our health either in a positive manner or a negative manner every single day.
Right. And you mentioned just two things out of there, that list you just mentioned, sleep and stress. So sleep and our stress affects our blood sugar?
It definitely does. If you think of sleep, so one of the big things with sleep is really big for setting what are called circadian rhythms or sleep-wake cycles. So in the morning, certain hormones are prevalent and are higher, and at night other hormones are lower, and those are directly related to certain hormones like insulin or what's called glucagon that play a role in blood sugar responses. So one's ability to handle, let's say, a load of sugar in the morning is very different than it is at night, and so when you start dysregulating sleep, that can dysregulate those hormones, and you could have someone that maybe doesn't sleep very well for a night, and all of a sudden their blood sugar levels look that of a diabetic, and then all of a sudden they have a good night, and then they go back to normal. So there's a big interplay between those two things, and then same thing with stress, is stress heavily affects what's called our endocrine system, and our endocrine system plays a large role in producing the hormones that help to regulate blood sugar. So the more dysregulated your stress is, the more dysregulated that makes your endocrine system, and the more dysregulated that makes your blood sugar system.
Wow. Dr. Perry Maynard is with us. Integrated Health Systems is the company. Their number, 303-781-5617. And Dr. Stedman has been kind enough to give us a free consultation for the listeners here to Your Health Matters. So, again, that number is 303-781-5617. Now, when we talk about diabetes, that's one thing, boy, that's just been probably rising at an alarming rate. And juvenile diabetes, I can probably see coming, and type 2 diabetes. There's several different types of diabetes when we just talk about that, isn't there?
Yes, there are. You know, a lot of people just think of, type 2 or even just type 1. But there's many forms. You know, most commonly you have type 1, which tends to onset early on, maybe in infancy or childhood. You have type 2, which used to be adult onset and used to be later in life, but you're seeing where I saw a statistic when I was putting something together. I can't remember the percentage, but it was astronomically high of 20 and below developing type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
I mean, this used to not be a thing. It, like I said, it used to be called adult onset diabetes. But kids are getting there so much faster. And then you have what a lot of people don't talk about is what's called type 1.5, or what's called latent autoimmune diabetes. And what that is it looks kind of like type 1, and it looks kind of like type 2, but it's type 1.5, and it's more of an autoimmune. And this is where you'll see a lot of patients maybe being treated like they have type 2 diabetes, and it's not working. Or they're being treated like it's type 1 diabetes, but it's not working, and it's because there's more of an autoimmune component to it, so you have to address it like an autoimmune disease. So that's a type of diabetes that not a lot of people talk about, and I see get overlooked very frequently in patients suffering from diabetes.
Right. Now, we hear the word sometimes in functional medicine that we can, we can't cure maybe something, but we can reverse it, I think is the way it's been said. So in the area of diabetes, which one of these can maybe you help some of that and possibly reverse it?
Definitely. I think type 2 diabetes, when it is truly type 2 diabetes, which is truly related to insulin resistance and dyslipidemia and dysregulation of that endocrine system, when done appropriately at the appropriate stage, can definitely be managed and reversed, and someone can be in a place where they are no longer diabetic by lab standards. I think that's definitely reasonable. Now, you get to a place where someone's a type 2 diabetic and they've destroyed their, islet cells in their pancreas, and now they need insulin. I think it's still possible, and there's some interesting studies looking at fasting and different things showing regeneration of pancreatic cells. But that's a point where it's a little bit more difficult and a little bit harder to necessarily say maybe the term reverse, but still can be done and managed. Type 1, I would say, is not one that is that I've seen, at least clinically, or come across research of being reversible, because there's more of an autoimmune component to that, but definitely managed, and there's no reason that things can't be managed with appropriate diet and supplementation or medications if needed. And then, like I said, type 1.5, what we see is that if you can manage the autoimmune disorder, you can really stabilize people. So I think type 2 is probably the best bet of making huge changes and stabilizing, because really, for the most part, type 2 diabetes is heavily lifestyle-induced. Inflammation, dysregulation of eating, I mean, so much of it has a dietary component, and very less of a genetic component, and far more of a dietary lifestyle component. So if you can make the interventions that are needed, there's no reason that you can't reverse those things. And I've seen it clinically time and time again with type 2 diabetes.
Right. So when you get to looking at this whole matter of blood sugar, I mean, everybody's so different, with how their body reacts to different things and when they eat, when they don't eat, How do you go about in helping people with this? They're at Integrated Health Systems, of just trying to get them to understand. And I just did a great blood panel with Dr. Stedman, and I love how he goes through each line item. So maybe that's where it starts.
Yeah, so I mean, that it definitely starts there with blood work. One of the best things that I love with patients who are diabetic or patients just wanting to optimize blood sugar is really customizing things towards them. So blood work is very important. So looking at standard blood work, looking at hormones, looking at the immune system are all very important. But we'll use what's called a continuous blood glucose monitor. So it's a monitor that for the longest time has only been approved for diabetics. And it's very hard to get insurance to cover, but you have a lot of companies now going straight to consumer. But it's a monitor that is installed onto the back of your arm. It's very simple. I've had one myself before. You don't even feel it going in or being there. And it gives you 24/7 readings of blood glucose. So you can see what is going on to your blood sugar when you sleep in the morning, how different foods affect you, how timing of exercise. So what we do is we have individuals wear continuous blood glucose monitors so we can learn the story of their blood sugar. And then at that point, we can start making targeted interventions and get live feedback on what works for them, because what works for them may not work for another person. You know, maybe the intensity of exercise needs to be toned down a little bit. Maybe we need to shift carbs to the morning versus the nighttime, or, you know, so it really allows us to customize things for that patient, and then it takes the guesswork out of it, because we look at the monitor, we say, did that work or did that not work, you know, and get them to a point where then all those other lab markers start normalizing, because we can see that the things that we are intervening with really actually work.
Right. Now, are there some general things you can say to people, like, you know, you hear some people say breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and yet I know many others that maybe intermittent fasting, which I know you're, I think, a big fan of, you know, maybe you don't eat something till 11, and then you cut it off at, you know, 6, 7, or 8 o'clock at night. So what's best for us to eat? How do we eat?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And unfortunately, I don't think there is one size that fits all. One thing I've actually found, and I've kind of changed my narrative in certain ways, is that actually I find that people actually have a much better, what's called glycemic response or response to blood sugar in the morning versus the night. So I actually think people do a little bit better loading some of their heavier or higher amount of carbs in the morning, because they're more insulin sensitive in the morning because they've been fasting overnight, and actually maybe being a little bit more low carb or eating a little bit earlier at night. But that also depends on activity level. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest things is strength exercise, aerobic exercise, walking. All of those things are really good for mitigating blood sugar spikes. So I always tell people, you know, if you're going to eat a big meal at night, you need to make sure, in essence, that you've done something to earn that, right? And what I mean by that is that one of the simplest concepts for blood sugar is eating beyond what your body really needs. To keep it simple, your body, if it needs, you know, so if you look at glucose, so glucose is used by, you know, every cell in the body. And a majority of the brain runs off glucose, okay? If glucose is not present, you have processes that can break down fats and proteins to turn them into glucose and sugars, okay? This is what's called gluconeogenesis, right, or the genesis of glucose from other byproducts. So an example of why keto works in simple terms of losing weight is that you deprive the body of one fuel source, you force it to make it from another. So it forces you now to break down fat, okay? So that if you're very inactive and you're sedentary and you're eating the same amount as maybe a high-level athlete that works out twice a day and is very active at work, you're going to lead towards blood sugar dysregulation and maybe weight gain, because your body is going to store that. So if you're bringing in excess energy, your body will store that in really two different things. It will either store it in the muscles or the liver as what's called glycogen, which is storage glucose, so that when you go do your next bout of running from the line, you have fuel stored, or it's going to store it as fat. So if all of your glycogen stores are full because you've been eating a lot of carbs you haven't really been physically active, the more you eat, you're going to now start storing it as fat because there's excess energy. So that's the simplest way, and it's not 100% true. There's a lot more nuance, but from a simplistic manner, eating more than you're really burning
right.
is actually a really big piece, you know. So that's a simple way. In regards to fasting, not fasting, that depends on the person. And like I said, some people do better fasting in the night versus the morning, and it's, you know, you really only see that by doing the continuous blood glucose monitor and seeing how they respond. But I always tell people another thing, too, is one of the best things that also, too, if you're going to eat a heavy meal or a high-carb meal, is what are called postprandial walks. So postprandial walks are walking for 15 to 20 minutes after a meal has been shown to be very, very effective in curbing glucose spikes, right? And the idea is that you force your muscles to become active to uptake that. So as the glucose comes in, your body's saying, okay, do I burn that or do I store that? And if I store that, do I store it in my muscles or do I store it in my fat? Well, if you start being a little bit active after a high-carb meal, your body's going to say, okay, we can't store that. We need to send that to the muscles, right? We need to utilize that versus, let's say, eating a big bowl of pasta and sitting on a couch. Your body is going to just take that, and if your stores are already full, it's going to store that into fat. So that's kind of the simplest way I can tell you, because, like I said, it's got to be very custom for the person. But the key is really, honestly, is making sure that you're not eating more than you're, you know, or that you're expending more than you're eating. If you're eating more than you're expending, that's going to lead to excess blood sugar.
Yep, it sure does, as Dr. Stedman told me the other day. Hey, now, when you say fasted morning activity, let me ask you a question. Is it good for us maybe just to wake up, throw on some tennis shoes and shorts, and go do a mile walk before we eat anything?
Yeah, I think that's actually a great thing. I think, you know, it doesn't have to be a body demoralizing workout where you're, you know, hitting the weights in high intensity for an hour, 2 hours in the morning. I think, honestly, if anything, that can be detrimental for a lot of people. Yeah, I think a simple getting up and getting moving, getting the heart rate up, getting outside, getting in the cold, getting in the sun, walking for a mile or two really helps to speed up that metabolism. And what it does is it makes your muscles very sensitive to insulin. So when you eat that first meal, that goes to your muscles. It goes directly towards refeeding your muscles and not storing it as fat. So, yeah, I find fasted morning cardio or some sort of movement that gets you active for at least like 30 minutes can be really beneficial in setting the tone for the rest of the day. So not even just that meal, but the rest of the day having your blood sugar levels be a little bit more stable.
Right. And again, I realize everybody's different, so we're not giving this out as a blanket thing for everybody to do here. But when you talk about the strength training and maybe doing some weights, would early afternoon, mid-afternoon be the best time maybe to do that after you have been up for a while and eaten a few things, or evening?
Yeah,
what do you like?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And like you said, it can kind of depend. You know, I won't get too complex. I mean, I think it becomes personal to the person's schedule.
Sure.
You know, are they wanting to get their morning workout? Ideally, one of the best things, you know, if you're looking at weight loss or fat loss per se, is that you're waking up in a fasted state. You're doing a little bit of fasted work to do what's called glycogen depletion. So you're depleting the stores that you still have with light exercise. And then you're eating, maybe not eating a ton of carbs throughout the day. So then throughout the day, you go into a little bit of a deficit where your body has to start to burn fat. And then you use strength exercising to really stimulate the muscles to be more absorbent of glucose. And then that's when you eat your more high carbohydrate meal around the strength training. I know, again, that can be done in the morning. It can be done in the evening. I definitely don't recommend people who aren't adapted and haven't been doing this a while to be doing heavy strength training fasting. I don't think that's great for a lot of people. I think that's really only good occasionally and for people who are really what's called fat adapted.
Mm-hmm.
But for your, you know, regular person, you definitely want to make sure that you're eating something before and after an intense resistance training exercise, because you want to build muscle. And those calories help you to build muscle. So once again, you could do it in the morning or the evening. I'd say whatever comes works well for, you know, the schedule. Granted, we do know that at least in males, testosterone tends to spike more in the later afternoon. So some might do a little bit better with strength training more in the afternoon versus the morning. But a lot of times I find that becomes, honestly, schedule, what works best for the person's schedule.
Right. Dr. Perry Maynard is with us. Once again, is Integrated Health Systems. Their number, 303-781-5617. And we kind of changed it up this year. Last year, we were doing a lot of different webinars with just individual team members like Dr. Maynard. And we're trying a few things there at the start of this year where it's kind of a team panel approach. And so that date will be the 16th of February at 6 p.m. And so kind of reflect back just a few minutes on how the thyroid one went and then kind of the benefits of all you guys being together for that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it went really well. I think it was fun because what was cool was that I think it allowed us to even learn things from each other, you know, whether it was something that Dr. Stedman said or Jake said. It was things of where, you know, oh, I haven't heard you explain it like that. That's really cool. So I think it was helpful for patients and individuals, but I think it was also helpful for us as practitioners to grow closer and to collaborate and learn a little bit more about each other's approach or certain nuances that maybe we hadn't realized before. So it went really well. I think we had a really good turnout. You know, people seem to take a lot away from it. So we're really excited for this next one to just keep doing and see how people like it.
Sure. And all you have to do is call 303-781-5617 and just mention you would like the information on that webinar. And once again, it is Tuesday, February the 16th at 6 p.m. Well, Dr. Maynard, I know you're a football fan, played college football. Tell us what the Broncos should do for a quarterback.
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. Honestly, I don't follow the Broncos quite as much. I'm just happy that my Buccaneers, that I've always been a big fan.
Oh, you're a Tampa Bay fan. All right.
Yeah, I grew up or lived in Orlando for a while. And when I was a kid, I was a huge Bucs fan. I still remember when they played the Raiders. I think it was in 2003. And I think it was San Diego in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And they won. And that was the time they had a killer defense. I think Brad Johnson was their quarterback at that time. But I've always loved them. I kind of fallen off of them over the past year because they've been very disappointing and sad.
Sure.
And I actually think it's really cool to see someone like Tom Brady, once again, love him or hate him,
yeah,
to be able to come to a team like that and to turn them around in one
sure
year to be a Super Bowl. So yeah, I haven't paid much attention to the Broncos. I know people are not going to be happy with me.
No, that's all right. Hey, they hadn't deserved it much here of late. And yeah, like you say, Brady, like I say, love him or hate him, whatever you think of him, to be in his 10th Super Bowl is insane.
It's crazy. to me, I love it. I think it's so cool to see those people who are so dominant, whether it's a Michael Jordan or a Muhammad Ali or any of those people or Kobe Bryant, you know, who are just so good for so long. It's just so admirable. You're just like, what are they doing?
I
need to do what they're doing.
Yeah, you want to talk about a guy that's evidently got a good diet. That's Tom Brady. The guy looks the same as he did 10, 15 years ago.
Well, that he is a great example of what taking care of yourself. And, yeah, you know, people say he's got all the money in the world, which is true. But those same principles can be implemented, and you don't need hundreds of millions of dollars. But it's shown how taking care of his body has led to him being in his, you know, what, 43, I think?
Yeah.
And still playing at a high level. So it's pretty cool to see. Sure. I don't know what his brain looks like, though. That might be interesting.
Exactly. Well, I tell you, it's going to be a great game. And I tell you, man, Mahomes has been great for Kansas City, so it should be a good game for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Maynard, hey, man, I know you're busy. We appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to our visit next time. But, hey, don't forget the webinar February 16th at 6 p.m. Just call the office, 303-781-5617. And, Dr. Maynard, we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for being with us. And thank you for joining us today for Haystack Help Radio and Your Health Matters. Hope you have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.